नमस्कार आणि स्वागत देव बरो दीस दिव तुमका सगळ्यांक आयकतल्यांक. हांव रिची आणि आयच्या सुशेगा दनपार प्रोग्रामार आमच्या संगात आसात हेक्टर आणि हेक्टर असो एक फ्रेंड. तुम्ही आता ऐकले एक गायन, ताचो आवाज तुमका आता गायकाराचो आवाज तुमका वळखूंक जालो की ना म्हाका गोत्तो ना, पण देट वॉज बापी लॅरी सिंगींग राणी मुजी गो तू. सो हेक्टर कसो आहे तू आज?
हा बरं असा रिचर्ड.
जेवलो आहे की गट्ट?
हा
नर्वस आहे की आज?
नॉट मच.
पास्कांचे फेस्त कशें गेलें तुजें?
बरें जालें,
बरें जालें,
बरें जालें.
घट्ट जेवलो गी आनी घट्ट पियेलो. 40 दिसाची प्रार्थना आनी फास्टिंग पुरा गेले एका दिसान. तुजे आज तुजो सांगता की ईस्ट अण्णा आयले तूं ताका इंट्रोड्यूस करताय की आमकां.
गुड आफ्टरनून लिसनर्स, इट्स an absolutely marvelously gloriously brilliant day today in Auckland. The sun is shining, the temperature is about 22 degrees, the birds are singing, the flowers are blooming, the bees are buzzing, and it's an absolutely appropriate day to talk about the joys of gardening. And we have the privilege of having in our studio today my teacher and my friend now, Jim. I had the privilege of meeting Jim about 5 years ago when I was doing a horticulture course through the Taratai Agricultural University. And Jim was our teacher in planning and designing landscapes. And also he took another paper on the care of tools, power tools and garden tools. And Jim has had a very checkered career, but I will pass it on now to you, Jim, to tell us something about yourself.
A checkered career. Hector, yes, I've done a few different things in my time. I went to university to learn to be a chemical engineer because I liked chemistry at school. That turned out to be a mistake. I needed to do something creative, and I felt the need to do something physical that involved outside and hard physical work. So I sat down, and there weren't any computers then, but I fed all this information about myself into a sort of notional computer to let it analyze and tell me what I should do. And it came back and said, be a landscaper.
Oh.
And I said, that I don't know how to be a landscaper. It said, be a landscaper. So I did.
Okay.
And I started with, this was in England, I started with £500, which was given to me by a rich man in the village following the sudden death of my parents in a road accident.
Oh.
And I was broke. And so these lovely people, this man and his wife, came round and said, well, here's some money, and we would like you to treat it as a present so you don't have to worry about paying it back. That was a life lesson. And I've thought, well, I can't repay those wonderful people because they're dead now. So all I can do is try and pass it on in one way or another.
Oh, and so that's how you became a teacher?
Well, it's not. it's how I became a landscaper.
Okay.
And then I emigrated to New Zealand in 1967, and it was very hard to earn a living at that time, and I was offered the chance to teach evening classes. And so I applied, and they said, okay, give us a curriculum of what you think you'd do in these 12 weeks, I think it was, short course. So I wrote a curriculum, and they said they liked that, and so off we went. And so I've been talking to students ever since, I think it was 1968 or 9, then, doing that.
So was it here at the Unitech? Or?
No. Unitech doesn't exist then.
Oh, okay.
And this was just what you call it, the high school, evening institute, you know, free classes and all that. And one thing led to another, and in 1971 I went back into landscaping and scratched a living at that for quite a number of years, and then another thing led to another thing, and I got approached by this new Unitech place. Would I come and take part in the new program in landscape design?
Okay.
Well, I had done quite a bit of landscape designing, but my forte is more in construction, mainly because of my upbringing. My father was a craftsman, and a very clever one, and a very versatile one. So I had grown up not just respecting tools, but absolutely revering tools. And I got into serious trouble if I mistreated a tool. And so it came naturally to me to start doing some construction. Okay. And so forth.
So, Jim, you have sort of educated yourself at the University of Life.
Very much so. Yeah. Nice way to put it, Richard. Yeah. Yes.
So everything from experience as such. So how did you sort of kept the instructions from your community, hey, you're a chemical engineer and now you're pursuing your personal traits or your personal...
Well, one way to pursue what you want to do is not to tell people about what you don't want to do. I promoted myself as a landscaper because I had a bit of experience by then. Mm-hmm. And you talk about experience of life. Yes, it teaches you some tough lessons. And so, of course, like all humans, I've made some mistakes in my time and I hope benefited.
Yep.
So you mentioned about this 500 pounds that you got, and that was a lesson that you learned from it. What sort of a lesson that you learned?
Here was a man who was wealthy and was generous and a benefactor. And he taught me that we should always be generous to other people less lucky than ourselves. And he and his wife became great friends of mine. Mm-hmm. And that 500 pounds bought me an old vehicle and my first machines, some mowing machines and a rotary hoe and chainsaw and things like that. 500 pounds in 1964...
Was a huge sum of money.
It was quite a lot of money,
yeah.
I'd never had that sort of money in my life before. I mean, we were not a wealthy family by any means.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I can say, Jim, that that lesson you have learned, you're continuing now from what I have known you very well. So, Jim, now, talking about landscaping and all, so how important is planning and designing your garden to a home gardener?
Would you ask a builder to start building you a house if he didn't have any drawings to work to? Clearly, if you're going to make anything, it might be a razor blade or it might be a telephone or it might be a garden, you have to design it. Someone has to design it if it is ever going to be successful.
Right.
So I think design of gardens is very important, and when people ring me up and ask me to come and talk about a design and they say they've just bought this house, now it might not be a new house, it might be an old one, but you buy a house, let's say you buy an existing house, it's got a garden already, but it's somebody else's garden, it's not your garden, it doesn't necessarily conform to your taste, it doesn't necessarily grow the plants you want to grow. And so until you've done such redecorating and refurnishing in the house as you feel makes it home for you, you have to do, I think, the same thing in the garden and work out what it is that you want. And a lot of people have difficulty doing that. And I think the primary, that is to say, the initial function of a landscape designer is to help them think through some options and to find out from them the things that they like and they don't, and people very often have never even thought about that before. Mm-hmm. And they're a bit surprised at the questions I ask. Quite intimate, some of them.
Oh, okay, it goes to that extent.
Well, it's a lifestyle.
Okay, yeah. So when you are thinking planning and designing, is it only, they talk about hard and soft landscaping. So what is the difference between hard landscaping and soft landscaping?
The average full garden design, construction and everything consists of about two-thirds hard landscape, which is building, really. It's the hard materials. It's the paving and it's the timber work and it's the swimming pool and rock work. Soft landscaping is everything to do with the soil and the plants.
Okay. Right.
So two-thirds, one-third, is it? Or
roughly.
Roughly two-thirds, yeah. One-third as such. So what's the hard part? I mean, what goes, that is the timber that you put on as the fencing? Or
it's
as
the concrete
edge?
And it's the asphalt and it's the cobblestones and it's the bricks and mortar and blocks and pergolas and decks and...
Oh, okay.
Okay. That buildings. Would be if, let's say, you really have a big budget to spend on landscaping. But supposing for a home gardener, is designing for sun, for wind, and all that, would that also come under landscape design?
Yes, absolutely, because if the garden is an outdoor space for you to enjoy, you need to set up the physical environment to do that. and shelter. You mentioned shelter. It's hugely important because Auckland is a windy place. New Zealand generally is a windy country. And people don't like sitting in a cold draft. You noticed?
Yep.
Yeah. I noticed.
And so you need to set up shelter for them somehow. You need to set up privacy is a huge thing in the suburbs, particularly. You don't like to feel you're being looked at and overlooked by your neighbours and so forth. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was talking to a couple one night and I was showing them how I liked to create a different view or vista from each window, and they had French doors to their main bedroom, and I said I would like to create out there a lovely little garden where you could be completely private and it's just an extension of the bedroom and nothing else. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't even matter if you went out and sat out there with no clothes on. And he looked at her and she looked at him and then he looked at me and said, yeah, I'd like that.
You know, we were at a beach during Easter time, and this was a Lang's beach as such.
Yes.
And there
beautiful
were,
place.
Beautiful place. And there were large number of big houses all over the place, very close to one another. Mm. You just mentioned about privacy. None of those houses had curtains on their huge full-scape windows.
Yep. Could you see in?
Yes.
Hmm.
They didn't approach you.
Yeah.
They didn't take advice from you.
We don't have curtains on our bedroom, which is floor-to-ceiling glass, but then you'd have to come right up and climb onto the deck in order to see in. So we don't feel naked particularly. And let me tell you, at 80 years old, it doesn't matter a damn.
Okay. And, okay, apart from us, you know, needing shelter and all the plants, you often talk about building shelter so that the plants are sheltered from the wind and things like that. So are plants affected a lot by the wind?
Some are, and some provide the shelter and are extremely wind tolerant, or they're tolerant of salt spray coming from the sea and so forth. And so the Swiss guy I was in partnership with in the 70s used to say there is a plant for every location, and Leo was right, absolutely right.
Okay, so good. So I think on that note, talking about planning and designing and landscaping for the garden, we'll move on to a song. Richard, can you play us a song?
Yeah, we'll play a song for you by Tony Martin and Tita called Paulam.
This Paulam Zolta Adota Dalota Lamrun Rosyar Wata Tona Sana Zota Kuri Gadar Dita Tache Wazon Geta Punam Chintu Sri Paulam Jivita Zogota No she bande kyota jivita white bore no she batte rota no she fight for kire munisti sozata jivita tokyoto munisu tokraita Kastik famil asli, tanje asle tok chere, mai panchi kok dile, moi pasan waluile. Yuk engineer dalo, दूसरा कोटे इश्क में ओले दोगांचे ये कुछ रोगो पुन वेगले रोस्त्याल पावले इंजीनियर की रेस सालो दूसरो लोकात लूटालो मौवाले पोना कुरून आपले पोट बुत्तालो माई पाई ती तू की जाऊन Continua a plopran solo Ingegner pure Paolo Moali roster ullo शिपते तुझा आदिन पावलाती तुझा पायान उजवार पसो जातोलो दासलेट ना तोर दियान उड़प्या पणान चलता रोस्तो दिस्ताना दोयान मासो कसो पिवतोलो उदिक ना तोर तोयान ये सगले नोशी पुता मुनीस पावला चुकोयता ये वाइट रस्त्याचेर पावो योग वाइट इश्ट आपोयता बरो आसो तोर योग इश्ट बरो मारो जाकोयता तू तुझ्या पावलानीचो जसो माय पाय शिकोयता
तुम्ही ऐकतात सुशेगात दनपार कोंकणी प्रोग्राम आणि ॲपच्या संगात आज असा हेक्टर आणि जिम आमका गार्डनिंग विषयी माहिती देऊ जिम ॲट द ब्रेक यू मेन्शन्ड अबाउट समथिंग अबाउट लँडस्केप अँड ह्युमन हॅबिटॅट अँड गार्डनिंग आय मीन आय गॉट अ बिट कन्फ्युज्ड अबाउट इट सो कॅन यू जस्ट आर्टिक्युलेट दॅट इन अ
पीपल आर ऑलवेज आस्किंग अस इन द इंडस्ट्री व्हॉट इज लँडस्केपिंग रिअली अँड I, in the end, boiled it down to a definition which I called making habitats for humans. And any human who's existed outside the house for any length of time knows there's more to a garden than just plants, because if it's a sloping garden, it's hard work having to carry everything by hand, so I always try to design one pathway from one end to the other of the garden which does not incorporate steps. So you try to make it slopes that are easy to push a barrow up, so you have to think about the practical aspects. You have to think about how sheltered it is, we've talked about that, whether it's a beautiful view to look at while you're lounging on your lounger on a
Sunday afternoon.
On a Sunday afternoon. Lazy Sunday afternoon, you got no mind to worry. Close my eyes and drift away. Now, the garden atmosphere. I loved that song. This was a popular song in England in the 60s.
That could be our signature tune for Sussegar
well,
Dunbar.
Could be, except it's a Sunday afternoon and today is Saturday, but let's not get too picky. So, yes, I could fill the big note sheet in front of me with parameters that you need to consider in designing a garden.
Okay. So we'll move on then, Jim, to the next thing about preparing and maintaining your garden, about soils and compost and all the things which go to make a lovely medium for the plants to grow in. So could you take off on that or advise us on that?
A nice outdoor habitat for humans almost always includes plants.
Yep.
They're not going to be happy plants if they aren't in a habitat which is good for those plants. And so, as Leo used to say, there's a plant for every location, but you have to create the location for that plant sometimes if you want it to be there. So tropical plants don't like icy cold winds and frosts and things in the winter. Swamp plants die if they dry out.
Mm.
And the big problem we have in Auckland on our sticky clay, wet soils and very humid climate and high rainfall is the opposite of that. Plants are very often too wet.
Mm-hmm.
And the catch cry, the slogan I'm always yelling at students is roots must have air. Roots must have air.
Right.
And if the soil is poorly drained, there are not enough air spaces in the soil, there is not enough oxygen for the roots, and if the roots don't get oxygen, they die.
Okay.
And guess what happens to the plant without roots?
Oh, so we were always, before I joined your course, of course, I thought that plants don't need oxygen. They give out oxygen and they take in carbon dioxide.
That is perfectly true. A healthy green plant does that in the daytime when light is falling on it. And oxygen is the waste product from its collection of energy from light. Photosynthesis, we call it.
Yeah.
And so it's using the energy and it's using carbon dioxide and water to build sugars, and those have built further into starch. And that is the diesel in the tank of the plant. But a plant is a living thing, and it respires. And so during the daytime, you don't notice that it's taking in oxygen because it's producing far more oxygen than it breathes. Nighttime, it does. And the roots consist of ordinary living cells which have to have oxygen to breathe. Therefore, if they don't get that oxygen, the roots will die.
Right. And so if there is too much water in the soil, there's no oxygen. There's less oxygen, I think.
Yeah, because although oxygen does dissolve in water, just about enough to sustain fishes, it's not enough for roots.
So when you design your garden, and you said that different plants require different type of soil composition as such, so how do you sort of make out what should be the mix of the garden?
Well, if you start with the existing soil and can choose plants that fit your requirements that will grow happily in the soil, that is the best situation because you don't have a hell of a lot of work to do or money to spend. If you insist on wanting to plant cacti and succulents from desert gardens and things like that, you've got to do a lot of drainage and you've got to use a soil composition which has an awful lot of empty space in it, like a sandy soil or something like that, so the air can flow freely through it.
Mm-hmm.
And these plants, which exist in very dry places in the world, can live there because too much water and they're dead.
Okay.
And in wet soils too, you can have fungal diseases in those wet soils where these fungal diseases can exist, whereas they will not in dry soils. And so you're hearing all about the cowrie dieback. Mm-hmm. You've heard about it now.
Mm-hmm.
This is
mm-hmm.
caused by a horrible fungus in the ground called Phytophthora. Don't worry about that. I'll spell it for you later. And that is a disease which only exists where there's plenty of water in the soil, and it will exist where there's very, very little air in the soil.
Okay, so that's what you're saying is that if the soil is not free draining, water collects, and then the plants suffer from wet feet.
Yes, exactly right.
And wet feet is nothing but because of the humid conditions, because of excess water, not draining water, the fungal disease thrives and destroys the plant.
Precisely.
Okay.
Bang on the money, Hector. Last spring was long, cool, wet, and led to an awful lot of fungal disease in the ground. And there's a particular native shrub which grows very freely and all over the place in my garden, and they are going down like flies now. They're dying all over the place because they got their roots too wet.
But don't you think, Jim, your chemical engineering background or training or information holds pretty well in the trade or profession that you're engaged in?
It's been a huge benefit.
So you understand the chemical compositions of the soil and the way the water interacts with that soil and with the plants as such?
To a degree I do. Soil chemistry is enormously complex.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't pretend to be an expert about it, but I know enough to know how to,
So I'll ask a question. So, okay, in Auckland, West Auckland, and most many parts of Auckland, it's got a clay soil.
Yes.
Which is not very conducive for the growth of plants.
True.
And could, because it is not free draining, it is not, doesn't have a good structure. How can one improve the structure, or is it the texture of the soil?
The first thing is drainage. The great English Prime Minister Winston Churchill once said, if I had my way, I would paint the word insurance over every cottage door. Well, if I had my way, I would paint the word drainage over every gardener's door. Okay. You've got to get drains in there to let the water enter the drains and escape from the soil and go. And they also conduct air into the soil, and that's what everybody seems to forget. So, if you can drain the excess water out of the soil and introduce some air into the soil by any means at all, that's great. And introducing soil drains or land drains, or sometimes they're called tile drains or field drains, that's all the same thing. And you can alter the texture of the soil, that is, whether it's clayey or sandy, by introducing organic matter, because it makes it more spongy and more open. So you're creating more void spaces and freer drainage, so those void spaces which you are increasing also will have a higher percentage of air spaces and a lower percentage of water-filled spaces.
So you said organic matter. So what is organic matter like?
Well, compost, I suppose,
compost,
we'd say.
Yep.
But compost is made out of dead or dying organic material, usually plant material, and humus is that material which is rotted down so completely that there is only thing left is this very, very dark brown, very, very fine powder, which is called humus, and all the sustenance that could be obtained from all that material has gone because the microorganisms that are breaking it down have completed their cycle and finished.
Okay, fine.
So we'll take a break now, Jim, and listen to a song, which is, as I mentioned, it is Afghat. And you said it is not by the Nightingale or Goa, as Hector
said. Oh, I didn't
said,
say that. I said I didn't believe there were any Nightingales
Gales
in Goa.
In Goa. Okay, so this is the bulbul of Goa.
A bulbul. I've heard of this bulbul bird. Yes.
Kiya kamunon ho abka.
तुम्ही ऐकतात सुशेगाद दनपार प्रोग्राम आणि माझ्या संगत आज असात हेक्टर आणि जिम. सो जिम, वेन वी ब्रोक एट द अर्लियर सेशन यू मेन्शन अबाउट यूजिंग कॉम्पोस्ट टू ब्रेक क्ले. आय एम अ बिट वरीड बिकॉज क्ले इज अ व्हेरी स्टबन बिट ऑफ सॉइल. इट इदर गेट्स स्टिकी एज यू सेड ओर इट गेट्स टफ. सो is there any other chemical or way of breaking it faster than
you can certainly help using something like gypsum, which you mentioned. Gypsum is simply calcium sulfate, and that is why the chipboard that we line our houses with was sometimes called chipboard because it's made of gypsum.
I see.
And contrary to some people's belief, it's not full of poisons and things. You can use scrap chipboard and put it on the garden and break it up, and it works well for me.
Oh, okay.
And it's free, isn't it?
Yeah. That's free, yeah.
So, yes, it does help, but it doesn't perform miracles for you. It doesn't save you the work, really, but you put it on the top of the soil. It dissolves very slowly in the rain, works down slowly into the clay, because water moves slowly through clay, and bit by bit it does make the clay more crumbly. You can get a faster result using lime, which is also calcium, which is calcium hydroxide or calcium carbonate, which is limestone. But its effect seems to be less long-lasting than using gypsum.
And what is dolomite? Is that?
Dolomite is a mineral which consists largely of calcium carbonate, limestone, but it always also has magnesium carbonate. So it's got magnesium, which is another vital element that soil needs. I don't want to launch into a lot of chemistry now because I'll just confuse people.
Okay.
I think. And I'm not being patronising saying that. We haven't got time anyway. But there are these essential elements that plants need, and magnesium's one of them.
Okay. So just what are the, since you talked about elements or nutrients, which are the main nutrients which plants need?
They're always listed in order, and there are about 18 or 19 of them.
Oh, okay, listen to me.
And we were taught the word in biology, it's called CHOMSP, which is carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sulfur, phosphorus. And the carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen are obtained from the water and from the air. So they don't count as fertilizers. All of the others have to come from the soil. And they have to be in a form which they dissolve in the water in the soil. We call it soil water. And it can only be absorbed by roots from the water in the soil.
Okay.
If it can't be dissolved, it is not a damn bit of use to a plant.
Okay. So NPK, we all often hear about.
N is the symbol for nitrogen, P for phosphorus, and K for potassium. Because the European word for it is kalium, with a K.
Okay.
And so those are the first big three mineral nutrients that plants need, in the largest quantities, that is.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, so that's why a lot of these fertilizers, they put on the back of them NPK and the ratio of NPK.
That's right. It tells you the percentage of each of those things in the fertilizer that they're selling.
Yeah. Okay. So now coming to, approach, it's autumn now, and so what's a good thing to do in the garden these days, you know, or this month of April and coming month of May?
It's the season when people clean out their gardens. They try to get rid of weeds and they rake up rubbish and get the place tidy generally. Later in the autumn, an awful lot of pruning is done. Not quite yet for trees, because pruning trees at this time, particularly deciduous trees at this time, can be harmful. Wait until after all the leaves have fallen.
Okay.
And prune them in midwinter or very early spring. So I won't spend time on tree biology because you'll get me going and we'll be here tomorrow.
Okay. But pruning is... There are different schools of thought whether pruning is necessary or not necessary, but in your opinion... Pruning is helpful for getting more fruit and for in the following year?
You prune for several reasons. With fruit trees, you prune to improve the yield, and quite possibly you prune to improve the quality of fruit. Citrus is an example. Citrus trees form flowers and fruit throughout the mass of the canopy rather than just around the outside surface. So the stuff that's in the middle, the flowers that are in the middle, need more daylight and more sunshine to get on the fruit and free flow of air through there. And so pruning of citrus, because they're evergreen, is usually done at the time of harvesting the fruit. You take, and the symbol you see nearly always on packages and things like that of oranges is an orange with a couple of leaves with it. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And that's because often they used to prune with the fruit in one hand and the secateurs in the other, and they'd take a snip off the twig on which the orange is growing, and that is a pruning operation. And you open out that canopy so the light can shine right into it and the wind can blow through it. And they say prune it to where a bird could fly through it without banging into something.
Okay, so that helps the airflow through the tree.
That's right.
The sun.
Yeah, and most citrus will withstand quite severe pruning. And it's good, because when I had your lot, Hector, in my garden one time, and I said, here's this big lemon tree, prune it so a bird can fly through it. And I went off around the garden with some other people doing some other stuff, and I came back, and I don't think, Hector, you were the guilty party, but when I came back, you could have flown an albatross through it any direction. Let me tell you, that lemon tree is producing marvellously now, so people don't need to be too timid about pruning. Mm-hmm. Be brave and do it. You may prune to reduce a tree beside your front entrance to make it safer to drive out in the traffic, because when you're creeping out of the gate, you can see. You might prune so improve the view from your windows. I have to do that. I live in the bush. You might prune to get daylight into the house, daylight or sunshine onto the patio, whatever. So there's lots of reasons for doing it. Mm-hmm. Yep. We edit the trees. And there is a lovely pencil. There is a lovely poem, I should say, that I found somewhere, which relates pruning of trees to editing a piece for a newspaper. And it says, blue pencil knife, to keep it brief, edits the sprawled, loquacious beach and trims each hyperbolic leaf to fit the city's stumpy speech. Till, like a slogan, trim and terse it stands and sums up in a word the gist of that once epic verse whose every branch rhymed with a bird. And I thought, that's quite lovely, you know. And so I quote that at the arboriculture students and the tree people.
Are these the aboriginals?
No, the arboricultural people, the tree people.
Okay.
Yeah.
You went all over.
That's wonderful.
You went across the ditch.
Now you're getting all international on us, Richard.
Okay. Good.
So what would be the best thing? So we are at the end of summer, virtually. I don't know whether the weather patterns really say that we are end of summer. But what would you recommend to our people what they need to do in their garden now? Prepare it for the fruit in spring, and what would you recommend them to do?
If you've got a wet, yucky patch in your garden, it's still pretty dry, the soil. Somebody said, this morning, we've gone 10 days in Auckland without rain. I can tell you that's wrong. I drive an open car. On Saturday, I was in a deluge in Henderson. But we have had little rain for some time. So the soil, and the point you brought it up, Richard, you know, the clay is in that sort of cheesy state in which it's easy to dig. So if you are conscious that you've got wet spots in the garden and you really need to get some drains in, get them in now. Dig the trench and either lay some pipes or you can put rubble or coarse
compost.
Well, not so keen about that. I'll tell you why in a moment. But coarse hard material, you buy some base coarse or some scoria or something like that, and fill the trench with that, leading downhill so water seeps into it from the surrounding soil and escapes downhill. This is a good time to do it because it's not so hot for working outside. It is hard work and it is very rewarding. And then by the time the winter comes round and the rain comes, those drains are doing a real good job for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I pick up on your point about burying compost? A lot of people, when they plant a tree, they dig a hole and work some compost into the bottom of the hole.
Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely not. Here's the reason. We know that our sticky soils tend to be a bit short on oxygen. Compost, as distinct from humus, which is worked all the way down, compost is still decomposing, and the organisms in it require a huge amount of oxygen to breathe. So they're robbing oxygen from that all the time.
Oh.
If you put that in at the bottom of the hole and then cover it over, the already depleted oxygen situation at the bottom of that hole has made a whole lot worse. And you very often will actually kill the roots doing that. Compost naturally occurs on the surface because it's made out in nature of the leaves and the rubbish that just falls out of trees, and there it is on the top.
But I have all the birds coming around to pick up all the...
Wonderful.
So they should pick it up? if I put it on the top, the birds keep coming in.
They scratch about in it because all sorts of things eat the compost, eat the organic material, and then all sorts of other things, such as birds, eat them. And so you've got a whole food chain going around. And so soil is a living, breathing ecosystem with millions, literally, of different species of things, from microorganisms right through to birds. Oh. And in between, you've got worms and things like that doing wonderful things for you. Worms are the best friends you'll ever have in the garden. And I've never had an employee who worked for me 24/7, 365 days a year for no wages whatever. And produce something great.
Yeah, that is worms.
That is worms. They are beautiful.
So give us about two or three either fruit trees or veggies or something that we need to plant now.
I ought to say I'm not particularly a vegetable grower. I live in a place where actually growing vegetables is very difficult. But any food plant you plant, which is an annual plant, so you're going to harvest it within a year, needs a few months to do its thing, to grow and produce what it's going to produce, be it potatoes or tomatoes or whatever. So if you want early potatoes next season, now's the time to be planting early spuds. And then there are middle season ones and late ones, and you can plant those a bit later so they come through later on. That's just one example.
Okay.
Yep. So what are you doing, Hector? Are you planting anything today?
Tomorrow? Planted some broad beans. They grow well in winter.
It's a leading question. Think carefully before you answer.
And right now, as I showed you, Richard, what I've grown some time ago, this kantoli, vegetable, that has, it's really thriving in the garden at this time. I don't know, it's just taken off suddenly.
So can you ask Jim, what is the English
the
version?
Cherry guavas are fruiting now.
I've got big ones at home. Yeah. They're pretty big. The cherry guavas are not really cherry, they are
guavas.
Guavas. So Hector,
is this the big tropical one?
No, this is the cherry guava tree.
Yes.
But I picked it out of the pot and put it in the ground.
Yeah.
So now they've become quite big. So this is what Hector is saying. This is called kantoli.
Kantoli. You've caught me absolutely flat-footed because I've never seen one before. And I've never heard of one before, but it's shaped a bit like an elongated capsicum, but it's pale green and has sort of fleshy spike things all over it.
Yeah, those spiky things. Otherwise, it would have been very close to what we call it, a tenli or tenlum. But I've seen it for the first time. But apparently, Richard, the Gujaratis like this vegetable.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's 7 centimeters long, about 2 centimeters diameter, tapered towards one end, and it's a funny looking thing because it's got like a tail one end and a snout the other, and I expect it's going to grow beady eyes and four funny little legs in a minute and scamper across the desk.
So
what do you do with it? What is it?
Oh, it's a vegetable.
Yes.
And you cook it like you... There are sometimes quite big seeds in it, so you have to, cut it into half long ways.
Yes.
And take off the seeds and then make strips of it and just make
it
like a...
Treat it like you would a capsicum, really.
Yeah. So the equivalent as what he said is tandoora, which is called in Hindi, it is called tandoora, but I do not know the English name for it. It's a tropical veggie, which is just exactly like this without the thorns on it. And it's got a few stripes, light stripes, green stripes. So it's green in color, it's got seeds, but it's pretty easy to
eat. In India, where if you see it in the market and the photo, it's really more round-shaped or oval, and it looks like a porcupine, actually, with all those spikes on it. One last question, just one very quick question. What is your take on using fertilizers, like chemical fertilizers and all? Is it okay? Or, you see a lot of people say don't use fertilizers, use organic fertilizers. Is it okay to use...
I have nothing against synthetic fertilizers.
Okay.
And the chemical truth is that a nutrient compound, whether it's manufactured in a factory or whether it's generated in the course of making compost, is exactly the same, and it doesn't make any difference. Good compost the dry matter consists of about 6.5% nutrients, and all the rest is stuff which is really valuable because it creates the texture of the soil and it helps aerate it, which is what chemical fertilizers don't do. But if you want a greater concentration of fertilizer, then chemical fertilizers are probably a more labor-saving and possibly more economical way to get them.
Okay.
So thank you, Jim, for sparing your valuable time and coming and giving us a few tips on gardening, and more so telling us that horticulture is a part of landscaping and not the other way around.
That is what I believe.
Okay. You must have had a lot of opposition from various people on that.
You had to sort of get them to stand back from what they were doing and look at it in perspective a bit more. When they do that, they start to agree. When they start to understand what landscaping is, you're creating habitats from humans. Correct. And so you're making environments for the plants and via the plants for the birds and lots of other things too.
And I think, Richard, that that was in the context of landscaping.
I
was just wanting to also add my thanks to you, Jim. It has been a wonderful conversation with you, and I'm sure our listeners too would have enjoyed listening to all the insights you have been giving into horticulture and gardening and all the different aspects of it, and especially the importance of preparing the soil and what goes into making successful gardening. So thanks very much.
It's been a privilege. If we do this for 10 years, we might start getting some real information out there.
So this is Gonzago Coutinho called Fatel Vichy Kumbio. That means the morning, the rooster of the morning.
Farto recha kun bien survat ke le haga lungsa sopot ay le rat raja sopot ay le rat farto recha kun bien survat ke le haga lungsa sopot ay le rat raja sopot ay le rat. Pit pitait, pachwe dore, zodan zogur.